push? There we go. Right on time. No one will ever know that we were unbranded, completely naked. Who was wearing pants anyway?
Nobody, since the pandemic began.
Nobody. Welcome to the Backpack Show, everybody, where we discuss the latest fashion trends.
I'm so ill-equipped to discuss the latest fashion trends.
Amazon.com and Walmart both reported the same thing, which is that they sold 70% more tops than they did bottoms over the last 14 months, surprising zero people.
That checks out. Yes. I wasn't ever like fashionable or cool. I used to shop in thrift stores and stuff. And if anything ever came back into style, it was an accident. I never did it on purpose.
I buy my clothes based on other people's complaints. So that tells you how I am with fashion. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the Backpack Show today. First off, it's not like we just throw these shows together. We form these shows. We build up. We get a slip going, and then we kind of build everything into a nice, perfectly unified pot of goodness. That was like everything I could do for Samantha Hoffinger pottery. That was it.
Gotcha.
See, I said, we don't throw these shows together.
Got it.
Slip. Found it. Yeah. All right. So
if it doesn't land the first time, maybe just move swiftly on.
No. And my parents are thriller readers, bar none. So they have a chance of having already read Jeffrey Stevens. But if they haven't, they're going to get a chance to learn about Jeffrey Stevens.
This is going to be a very fun day. I'm always thinking about who we can learn about success from, but also who would be fun to talk to, who does something that maybe you've thought about doing or dreamed about doing and haven't managed to do yet. So he's a thriller writer, Jeffrey Stevens, used to be a lawyer, don't tell anybody. And he's the author of the Jordan Sandor espionage thrillers, also the recent thriller Crimes and Passion. His latest is Fool's Errand, which I'm listening to the audio version of now, and it's fantastic. We're also going to talk to Pottery with a Purpose founder Samantha Hoff about her adult clay sculpting kits that inspire creativity and mindfulness.
Isn't all pottery adult clay, depending on how you shape something?
Probably that's true, but, you know, let's just make it PG-13.
Oh.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Every
Boom Shakalaka.
Tim Kitzrow can read us in with Boom Shakalaka. It's a beautiful day.
Love him.
Voice of NBA Jam, NFL Blitz, Mutant League Football, which even had its own cartoon series for a minute. I wonder if they let him voice the guy on the cartoon. That would be kind of cool.
They should let him voice whatever he wants. He's hysterical.
Yes, indeed. So we all have somebody that we want to talk to. And I think what we should probably do is we should look into what kind of errands fools go on. I want to grab our thriller author, Jeffrey Stevens, because there's a lot of people. There's two things that happened during the pandemic. A lot of people stopped reading and a lot of people caught up on reading. I was a stopped reading guy until like a couple months ago, partly because as an author, when I'm writing, I don't read. And partly because I just couldn't get the energy up. And I was just very much happier to keep emptying my Netflix queue and refill it. So to get somebody on to talk about a thriller is a thrill. That means, Samantha, if you need a few extra minutes, you can roam away. We'll have you back in a few minutes.
If you want to whip up a piece of pottery for us.
Yeah, get a sandwich. Make a pottery sandwich. Jeffrey Stevens, welcome to the show.
Howdy. Great to be here.
Good to have you on.
So excited. I bought the audio version of your book, Fool's Errand. And I was telling before we started the show, I was saying that I never finish the books before. I try not to because I don't fiction books because I don't want to spoil anything for people. So why don't you set it up for us the way that you want to set it up so I don't spoil things right out of the gate?
Well, that's very nice of you. I must say, Fool's Errand is an interesting book for me because it's outside what I've been publishing up to now. And there's a factor there that is not true of many books, which is the plot is revealed in the first paragraph of the book, which, as you know, since you've been listening to it.
The plot, yes.
The plot.
But like not, yeah, there's a lot of twists. From what I understand, there's a lot of twists and turns.
Oh, yes. A lot of twists and turns along the way. But the jumping off point, so to speak, is that the main character, this young man who is a straight shooter and a workaday guy, had a ne'er-do-well father who lived on the fringes of organized crime who had died 6 years before. And in the first paragraph of the book, you realize, you discover that the young man has found a box of papers from that his father left behind. And in it is a letter that his father wrote to him just before he died, which is 6 years before. So dad is, in effect, talking to him from the grave and telling him, hey, listen, all these great plans I had, there's one that's real and there's a bunch of money and you've got to go on this treasure hunt and discover it and find it. And I can't tell you too much about it in case the wrong person finds this letter, then they would know, and so on. So that's the point. That's the jumping off point of the story. And so the young man has to decide, does he just put the letter back in the envelope or does he follow his father's dreams, which have always been a little, you know, half baked. And we know what he does since the name of the book is Fool's Errand. Et cetera, you know,
but, what kind of fool's go on? Well, workaday guy, he's kind of ill-equipped to like navigate all of those circles because his dad was in a kind of like unsavory line of work, right? Or like
that's correct. Right. That's correct. So a lot of the book is, it's about him rediscovering and reexamining who his father was, what his relationship with his father was, and finding out about himself. Because yes, you're right. He runs into a lot of difficult situations that he's not used to dealing with. And so I don't want to make this sound heavy because the book is fun. It becomes an international treasure hunt. It takes him from New York City to Las Vegas and ultimately to the south of France. And so we have a lot of scenic stuff that's interesting and fun. And there's romance, there's intrigue, there's danger, there's humor. And so I think it's really a fun read and we've been getting great reviews, I'm happy to say. And that's been very gratifying.
So you and I are both lawyers. I mean, you wrote the thing. I'm reading the initial chapters thinking, no, don't do that. No, don't tell this person that. Like, you must have been thinking the same. Like, oh
absolutely.
This character is like a babe in the woods.
That's right. He makes all those mistakes right from the beginning. And that's what the book is about and how, you know, and how we deal with these things in life. And so, you know, as you've been saying, I've written a lot of thrillers and I have a series of four espionage thrillers featuring this CIA agent called Jordan Sandor. And then I wrote a murder mystery called Crimes and Passion, which is the first of a series. I've already got the second one done. But during the pandemic, I really wanted to do something a little different. I really wanted to get more into the family thing because we're all locked up, basically. And in some instances, we were stuck with family. In other instances, we couldn't get to see family, couldn't see our parents, couldn't see our grandparents, whatever. And so I just thought this would be kind of a fun ride. And it's interesting what you said earlier that, you know, because you write, a lot of times when you're writing, you don't read. And that's absolutely true for me. If I'm in the middle of writing a book, I can't read because I'm afraid I'm going to be too influenced by the other writer, you know, the style, the plot and all that sort of thing. So I stay away from reading and I just write.
Now, one of the things that's true of most thrillers, and you mentioned it with Jordan Sandor, is that there's always a sort of character driven piece of expectation to these kinds of things. And I knew that you had your espionage one because it dawned on me that I think I read Rogue Mission. As I was looking through some of your other books, I was like, I'm pretty sure I picked that up one day in mass market form at a Barnes. Just, I judge books by their cover, Jeffrey, don't hate. And I just, that's the kind of book I wanted. I just wanted kind of a guns across countries, you know, let's do some things. And that's what I got. So
did you like it?
Of course.
I'll let you get away with that.
That's the fourth in the Sandor series. And I think it's a fun ride. I mean,
to answer the question you're thinking is how did you not go through number one? I was like, it was the book that was there. And I said, you know what? Let's try. Let's see what happens. And I had a good time. I'm sure I missed so much nuance because one part of doing character driven is that you have to make sure the character does the things that they're, you know, the sort of their classic thing, but I didn't know any of them. I was just into it.
Well, that's so true. And by the way, you could read the Sandor books, by the way, can be read in any order. It really doesn't matter. And so you read the most recent one, which is fine. But, you know, you're right about that, about character. That's so important. You know, as a writer, that the key is you cannot have a character do something that they would not do. I know that may sound silly, but these become real people to the writer. And so if you've got a character who's absolutely the most honest person in the world and suddenly they do something dishonest, there's got to be a reason and there's got to be some justification for it. Can I give you a great example of that, by the way?
Go.
My favorite movie is Casablanca. I just love it. It's everything. It's romance. It's political. It's a thriller. It's a musical. I mean, there are 11 musical numbers in Casablanca. People don't realize that. And I've taken courses in it. And it's just a fascinating book, movie, because it was never intended to be an A movie. It was basically a B movie. I mean, George Raft was supposed to star in it and so on and so on. So anyway, we all know those stories. So in this course, they said there's one scene, if you know the movie well, and for those of you who are listening or watching, I hope you know the movie. There's one scene where they go to see Sydney Greenstreet. That is, Ilsa and her husband go to see Sydney Greenstreet looking for these letters of transit. And we know that Sydney Greenstreet is this very selfish, very capitalistic, very, you know, very business-like guy who never does anything for anybody if there's no profit in it. And at the end of the meeting, he doesn't have the letters of transit. And he says to them, I don't know why I'm telling you this because it will not profit me at all, but you may want to go to Rick at the Cafe American and ask him about the letters of transit. The reason I bring this up is that was a totally out of character moment for Sydney Greenstreet. But in order to move the story along, the writers had to do that. Otherwise, they would have had a whole thing with Sydney Greenstreet would have to go to Humphrey Bogart. He'd have to say, listen, I think I know somebody who may want to buy the letters of transit, you know, and on and on and on. So my point is, sometimes you have a character do something that's out of character, but you have to justify it. And in this, it was with a wave of the hand. He said, I don't know why I'm doing this. It won't profit me, but go talk to Rick. And so I think about that all the time, because when you've got characters, you've got to keep them true to what you've built. Otherwise, the readers are not going to like it, because readers today are so sophisticated. They're going to say, oh, that's nonsense. You know, if I wanted, I could have gone to watch a soap opera if I wanted that.
By the way, even when it hurts,
yeah,
like if you watched Game of Thrones in the beginning and you see Ned Stark, he does some things that are perfectly in line with his character because he's a very noble character. But you're like, oh, no, don't do that. This is going to be bad for you. And, you know, you know it in your bones. It's going to be bad for them. But you also know that that character can't do anything else.
That's right. And now getting back to Fool's Errand, as you said, the main character, as he's going through this journey and this treasure hunt, he makes mistakes, but we know that's who he is. He's an innocent. He's a babe in the woods compared to these other ruthless characters that he's got to deal with. So that's what he does.
Well, his mom purposely kind of distanced him from all of that, thinking that, you know, she didn't want that life for him. And so,
which is why he didn't get that letter for 6 years.
Right.
But finally, she felt, you know, I'm moving. I'm emptying out the attic. And so you might as well have this box of papers from your dad.
Same.
And it's not clear in the story. Sorry, people, spoiler alert if you're reading the book, but it's not clear in the story whether she actually knew that letter existed. She just knew it was papers from his dad. And I wanted it that way. I wanted it to be unclear. Did she know there was this letter? Would she maybe have ripped it up if she knew? But anyway, so we wanted it to be fun.
So Deanna had a question. Do you start a book in linear fashion from start to finish, or do you write parts and then put them together?
Great question. I'll tell you how I work. And this isn't true of anyone. I think of a novel as a journey. So I think the most important part of your journey is what? It's the destination. If you don't have a great ending, people are going to be disappointed in the book. So believe it or not, I don't write the book backwards, but I have to know where I'm going to wind up. So I'm sorry, I use Casablanca as an example again, where, you know, Rick lets Ilsa go because there's a bigger thing than their romance. There's this cause, you know, the world war and all the rest of it. It is such a great ending, but you have to know that from the start. So if the three of us were going to go on a journey, let's say we're going to go cross country to LA, we would know that we're going to LA. We would also agree that we're going to make different stops along the way, but first you need to know where you're going to wind up. So the way I do it is I figure out where I want to go with the book, so that the reader is satisfied at the end. Then I go back to the beginning and figure out how to kick it off. And then I have fun sort of outlining, you know, the stops along the way. And that's really the fun stuff where, you know, you change your mind as you go, because I have an outline, but sometimes it changes. Like there are things about Fool's Errand that happened, which I won't destroy people's fun in reading it, but I didn't know I was going in those directions. And I said, wow, wouldn't this be interesting? And so that's what I did.
There are a couple different ways to work on a book like this. And one is just pure entertainment. Like, I just want people to read the book. I want them to have a great ride. I want them to leave the ride feeling happy, you know, for the amount of time they had, or at least satisfied. You know, you don't have to be happy with how everything goes for everybody, but you want to be satisfied. Do you layer in your politics? Do you layer in some kind of secret message for the future of man? Like what has to also go into a book to make it a Jeffrey Stevens, catharsis? Or is it just if these people ate popcorn while they read my book, I'm happy?
Oh, no. No, it depends on the book. So in the Jordan Sandor series, it's somewhat political because it takes a certain position about where we are in our country, where we are in the world, the dangers we're facing, who the real heroes are. One review that I got back when for the Sandor series, it's my favorite, which is said that he's an American hero that's easy to root for. And that's what I was looking for, because I think we need heroes now. I think we're a divided country. People are unhappy. There are issues. The pandemic was a bummer for everybody, obviously. But it didn't bring us together the way, say, 9/11 did. I know 9/11 was not a natural disaster. It wasn't a disease. But certainly the country pulled together really well. And we do that in a time of crisis. And I expected more of us as a people during the pandemic. So in my Sandor books, which were pre-pandemic, by the way, just to be clear, I try to have that kind of a message. In Fool's Errand, it's more of a family saga in its way. And what I wanted people to do is to come away from it thinking about their relationships with their fathers, their mothers, even if their parents are gone, because the point of the book is that our parents have great influence on us even after they've passed away. And I know my dad died young. I mean, no secret. That's, you know, what happens in the book. And that was what happened in my life. And to this day, there are moments where I think, God, I wish my dad could see me on your show today. You know, I wish he could, just call up and we could talk about something. In fact, the way I came up with the book was, I don't know if you guys ever had these conversations sitting around after a few drinks and you say, if you could spend one day with somebody who's gone, in the whole history of the world, who would it be? And some people say, I'd love to meet Jesus Christ. I'd love to meet, Isaac Newton. I'd love to spend a day with Winston Churchill. But a large part of us say, God, I wish I could have one more day with my mother or my father. There are things I'd want to ask. There are things I'd want to say and all that. And I got kind of like misty about that, having that conversation. And I thought, well, what if, and then I came up with this idea about the letter. You know, what if you find this letter from your parent 6 years after they're gone, and it's an impactful letter. It's not just like, hey, I love you and I'll miss you when I'm gone. This is a letter that sets them on an international journey. And I thought, well, that's really cool if you get that letter, but I didn't have the idea about the international journey yet. So I said, okay, that's a great hook. Guy gets a letter. Dad's dead 6 years. Now what?
and it's intentionally cryptic in case somebody not the son can find the letter.
Yeah. So that was kind of interesting, but that's what drove me to it. So in that book, it's not so much about a large worldview. It was really a closer to home view that really, if you're lucky enough out there that your parents are still around, whatever your relationship is with them, give them a hug. Because they did the best they could. I know maybe it didn't always seem that way. The main character in this book is the deceased father, Blackie, and he was not exactly father knows best. I mean, this guy was not the father of the year by any stretch.
He was complex.
He was complex, and he did the best he could to create the son that he wanted to create. And, you know, listen, kids don't come with instruction manuals. You know, Dr.
Spock. Some are more difficult than others.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But, you know, you have to understand that your folks did what they could do under their circumstances. They were rich. They were poor. I mean, I grew up poor. I mean, my parents did what they could for me. I worked my way through college and law school and so forth and all of that. But they're still your parents. And you should really look at that relationship and cherish it because it is absolutely unique. You could have any number of brothers and sisters. You could have God knows how many friends, how many acquaintances. You could have different jobs, different mates. Unfortunately, some of us wind up with more than one spouse. I've been lucky that I haven't gone through that. I'm married a long time. But we only get one mother and one father. That's it. And so that's something that I wanted to get across.
Well, the book is Fool's Errand. Jeffrey Stevens, I'm so glad you're there. My dad has one comment before we dump you backstage, which is, Jeffrey, hopefully you'll keep the movie rights. And then you can make sure that the lead characters are portrayed to your satisfaction. My dad just pointed out what you and I talked about backstage. I'm still upset about the 6'5" Jack Reacher choice.
Yes, I like that. Listen, tell your dad, I like Tom Cruise, but, yeah. You know, 5'7" is not Jack Reacher. I'm sorry. He's I like Cruise. Don't get me wrong, but not the right choice.
Lee Child has a cameo in that movie because of exactly that thing. And he's looking at Tom's fake ID and it says here you're 6'5". That's read by Lee Child.
That's right. He's like a TSA guy or something, right? In the uniform.
Something like that, yeah. That's right. All right. Backstage with you. Thank you. Stick around. Don't go anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. Boop. See? Oh, he's mid-sentence.
You're so mean. Sam Hoff. We try to make it cute. Country. You know, booping somebody mid-sentence doesn't make it more polite.
But I got some ads. And my Jack Reacher better be able to dunk. Says Cody. Cody, by the way, Jeffrey is down in, was from Kentucky, so Bourbon Country. Is now a Tennessean. So
it's so interesting to me how many lawyers end up being able to spin a really good yarn.
Right. Well, you know, you have to write all the time.
Grisham.
Laws of writing time, right? All right. So quick ads.
Robert and then we're grabbing McCaw.
Samantha. Probably now some others.
Jeffrey.
Some more. Got any more?
It's Fossil, Chip. The shirt is Fossil. You looking at mine? It's not mine he's talking about.
I'm not. No. I'm just. Oh. We're sponsored. We're sponsored by our people at StreamYard. CBrogan.me/StreamYard.
I'm sorry. Did you lose your lucky charms? Shall we look for them?
Nobody better touch me, Shalane. CBrogan.me/StreamYard. You can make a show just like this a lot better, probably.
For Pete's sake. No, it will not be better if they have Jeffrey Stevens on the show. It will be as good.
Wait, which one was Keanu Reeves? I don't even know what that means. Okay, we're also sponsored by Castos. So if you want to have a podcast set one up really quick and easy, castos.com. You can make a podcast in about half an hour, and then do you do the rest of your day?
So there's always someone who would rather listen than watch because they're, you know, in a situation where they can't watch easily. So castos.com makes it super easy to turn your video show into a podcast.
Sure, yeah. Okay, if you want to have a
beige. .online... They're arguing about your shirt. What color is Chris's shirt, Todd, online?
This one happens to be yellow. I found out after the fact. So this is my yellow shirt. Today's a yellow shirt day. Anyway, Todd online. See, we're going to meet. Okay.
What color is Chris's shirt, Todd online? You can get it for just 99 cents.
Is that yellow?
Yeah, it looks beige to me.
Mm. Thank you. That's what I thought.
I could go with the beige.
No, I feel like you picked the wrong one. Now you think that it's yellow or something and like it isn't. I don't know. Right. I'm not wearing yellow. You are correct. That is good. But together we'd make McDonald's.
You went from yoga to pottery. That's something. You just decided you didn't want to stretch you anymore. You figured you'd just stretch Clay.
Yeah. My background actually is in business. I started out as a data analyst and then I burnt out at my corporate career and I was looking at the people that were senior to me and I was like, this isn't the life I want for myself. And I quit and I became a yoga teacher. And when the pandemic hit, I found that although I'm here talking with you guys today, I didn't love teaching people online. It was super weird looking at little screens and it didn't have the same energy. So I switched gears and started to get my hands dirty with some clay, which was an old hobby for me. Yeah.
So when you say old hobby, it wasn't anything that you were ever doing to make any money. You weren't, you know, showing your pieces in galleries or anything like that?
No. So one of my favorite things about pottery is that it's super accessible. And don't consider myself an artist per se. I never went to school for it. I actually went to school for business twice. And I just really enjoy doing it. It makes it really hard to like be on your phone, which I know a lot of us struggle with. I'll like find myself.
Is it really hard? Like you still do it? You're like, wait, hold on.
I tried and then my phone was so, I mean, it's literally mud you have on your hands. So you're like touching the stuff and then you have to like a whole. Yeah. So I found that it was a really good way for me to like get off of my phone and stop watching Netflix. And I actually probably ran out of Netflix shows to watch. So I was like, I need to do something else. So yeah, that's kind of
always
how I
look
got
at
to
your
it.
Old hobby. Your old hobby is often what resonates in your bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So I had picked it up when I was younger in high school and just dabbled in it. And then did it once in a while in college. And then when I quit my job, I did it again. I always found it to be like a really relaxing hobby. your hands are busy. And when you're doing something physical, it makes it hard to think about something else. If you're thinking about something else, your hand can go through the bottom of the pot and things like that. So it's just always been helpful for me for mindfulness.
Now, is your pottery, there's a couple different ways to go about making pottery. One of them is you sort of build, you hand build, you take a bunch of, you know, material and kind of form it to what you want, or you throw pottery against a wheel. Do you do both? And is pottery with purpose one or the other, or how does that work?
So I do both personally. I like throwing on the wheel, but I actually enjoy hand building better. It's less messy, so I don't like to clean. So I tend to hand build more. Yeah, so you can see some of the pictures of the pottery and me, and I actually have some with me as well that I can show. So this is one of the air dry little pots. And it's a great way to do something at home so you don't actually have to leave, because ceramic clay actually gets fired in a kiln. So this is what the ceramic clay looks like. Oops. And you can see it has little speckles in it versus the air dry clay is just plain white and shiny. So we offer both kits, and you can make everything at home with instructions that are step-by-step. It includes the clay, the paint for the air dry, and handmade tools that were made right here in the US, which is pretty cool. And I geek out over like handmade stuff and do it yourself. And you can actually see the like sand marks on the tools, which I think is pretty cool, given that so much is manufactured by machines nowadays.
So that's a good point to bring up, which is that with painting, I always tell people one way to look and see if a painting is real or produced is how they manage the canvas. Like, does the paint just kind of flip off the canvas, or does it just magically stop at an incredibly tight line all the way around? And that's how you know it's been printed on there. Is that one of the secrets of deciding if something is actually a hand-built, real, people might have made it kind of pottery?
Yeah, so I have pottery that's, I mean, you can buy it anywhere, like at Trader Joe's or something like that, that is basically made by a machine, and it just looks so perfect, and it doesn't have the same, I don't know, like hand feel. And my pottery literally has my thumbprints on it, and so will yours if you make it, which is pretty cool because it's one of a kind. So that's kind of what makes it different. And you can see, let's see, I don't really have any, but the bottom of this pot is pretty, I keep rough. On things that are by a machine, it's pretty smooth, and I just think it has a nice feel to it to have something handmade at home. Yeah,
there are a lot of people talking about Ghost in the comments. I'm sorry, I can't think about pottery without thinking about the movie Ghost.
I haven't heard of it. I'm gonna have to watch it now.
Oh my gosh, it's one of the most famous movie scenes in the history of humanity.
Yes, you're gonna have to.
Sorry, but you're doomed now to have to watch part of this scene.
At least part of it. You don't have to watch the whole thing. Kind of a downer, to be honest. It has its moments, but yeah. But go back and look at the pottery scene. Just YouTube it.
Okay.
Here we go. Hang on a second. So one of the most famous you're not pottery do scenes it. In the movie. You know I am.
No, you're going to get copyright stricken.
Demi Moore is working in her pottery studio and she's sad because Patrick
Christopher,
Swayze's
do we have
dead.
To listen to your narration?
I wanted to narrate it because I don't want to get pottery. I don't want to get pottery struck. So they're playing Endless Melody and she's very sad and all that kind of crap. And
all that kind of crap.
I'm trying to remember.
She's very sad that the love of her life has been gunned down.
Yeah, she's very sad. Whatever. There she is pretending to do that. Demi Moore like does everything she says she's gonna do though. So like when she was a stripper, she was a stripper. When she learned pottery, she learned pottery. So that's her
worst movie of all time.
But as this song comes and plays on, she's kind of like, you know, doing her crappy thing. Now, hang on.
This scene's much longer than I remember.
I know. This is a 4-minute scene. Oh crap! Another humping. Here we go. So this is what's going on. They're making pottery and Patrick Swayze is like licking wax out of her ear. This is what happened in the scene. So he's
welcome
got his,
to the Backpack Show where Chris Brogan narrates movies for you and
he's
does
a
terrible
job. Potter, and they're making out and she wrecked the bowl. So
he's
that's a whole lot of equipment that she's
he's like
out.
A finance guy. Yeah, well, obviously he can't make pottery.
Clearly not a good, and he has a mullet. So that's about where that ends. So I am hilarious. Blown away that you don't know that movie, but that's okay.
Kat says, we have handmade ceramics that we've made and they are our treasures and hold our treasures.
Hey.
And Chip says that was like a really weird version of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
I never thought in my life I'd have a chance to narrate those pottery scenes. Oh,
like, he's a shirtless potter.
And Patrick Swayze has to go the whole, most of the whole movie channeling through Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg, yeah.
Houston. That would have made it a very different movie.
You would have made a very different movie.
My life.
Great.
So,
I'm
yeah.
crying.
Sister
Act would
make
me cry someday. Today's the day.
So, anyway, Sam, back to you. Let's talk about Pottery with a Purpose. What are these kits and what do you do and how do people participate with the pottery? Because it's not about watching you do it, it turns out.
Yeah,
I got
like
it
where
wrong.
Does the purpose come in?
So, sure. So, I've struggled with anxiety my whole life, and I thought when I left my job that I wanted to do something that was more meaningful than just making a paycheck. And part of the purpose is to extend this kind of therapeutic art to other people. Ceramics has this kind of connotation that you have to do it in a studio or someplace in particular, but you really don't need to. You can do it at home and you really don't need many tools at all. All you need is the clay. You need water and your hands. And I wanted to make that accessible to other people. So that's where this idea came from. And part of the other purpose is it gives back to a mental health initiative each quarter. So we release quarterly like little projects. And each quarter, there's a nonprofit that gives back to a mental health initiative. Yeah, so that's very part cool. of it. Yeah, and everything's eco-friendly as well. I think that our health is impacted by the environment we live in and the health of it. So made sure to have everything be as eco-friendly and recyclable, compostable, and friendly to our earth, so we have it for generations to come. Yeah.
How did you choose which cause to support?
So that's been one of the biggest challenges for me. The first thing I'm going to support is something that's close to my heart and my experience, which is living with anxiety and depression. So in the future, I actually am not going to be choosing the causes directly. I really want other people to have a chance to make an impact that they might not be able to have with their own funds. So I'm going to select someone's project every quarter and they'll be able to give suggestions for the charity that we give back to. And I'll make sure that it's vetted because I want to make sure that the funds are actually going towards the initiatives and not towards funding people's salaries and all the marketing and stuff like that. So yeah.
Do you foresee this as being something that you can manage and sustain long term, or are you even thinking like that?
I am hoping to maintain it long term. My background, like I said, is in business. I went to Babson for my MBA and undergraduate, and I just love entrepreneurship, and it's just been a dream of mine to own some sort of business. So I would love to see it grow and ultimately hire people to be on my team full time. Right now, it's just me and some people that have been helping me out with skills that I don't have, like building the website and some other things. But I do see it being a full time thing, and that's the goal. Yeah.
And the business side of it is that you're just hoping to have a lot of volume of people ordering these kits through an online distributor. Is that the basic premise of the business?
Sure. So I have the two kits. It's an air dry kit and then a ceramic kit. And I'm hoping that people will order the kits either one off or as a subscription. So like I said, there will be quarterly projects. So the first one you can make, I showed some of the pottery, but you can make a hanging planter, their instructions, and then also a mug. So there will be a different project in the fall. I'm thinking of doing a candle kit. And I also am doing events as well. So corporate events is one of the other parts. I know everyone's done paint night, and I am a horrendous painter. And I like brought this thing home and I kept it for a year, the paint. And I was like, I'm never gonna hang this or give it to someone. And I mean, anyone can make a pot that looks pretty good and functions, it holds something. And I'd love to bring that to companies and parties and things like that as well.
Do you wonder ever about the competition between this and really basic ass ceramic, you know, those paint a thingy places?
Yeah. So I've thought about that and I've done both. I think that there's a market for both of them. It's a different experience painting the pottery than getting your hands dirty with it and actually forming the pot yourself and having that kind of tactile experience. So I think that there's definitely the ability to have both thrive. And I've definitely gotten emails from people that are like, I've done painting my own pottery so many times, and I'd love to try my hand at doing my own ceramics. So I think there's room for both.
Oh, I'm with you. I mean, I support that. Chip points out the fact that you haven't seen his childhood pottery.
Mine was pretty bad. It was like, it's going to artistically be thinner in places.
Back when he was a politically acceptable comedian, I thought it was Bill Cosby who had that joke that basically you just put three grooves in it and it's an ashtray. Anytime you make any mistake with any pottery, it's like, well, now it's an ashtray. Kat says it is very needed right now. Lots of us with CPTSD, anxiety will be recovering from the past few years and need to supplement it with more things like pottery, hands in clay, heals. So there you go. That's one big vote, Sam.
I love that saying, hands in clay, heals. That's great. I totally agree. It's
really present in the moment.
It does. Yeah. I mean, and though, like I said, I mean, I'm not a professional at this. And like, sometimes I'll put a hole in the bottom of my pot and I'm like, oh, now it's a hole with a drainage, pot with a drainage, a hole. So it's very something you can kind of adapt and anyone can do.
Not that almost I'm not listening, anyone. But almost anyone. Not that I'm not listening, but the thing that I think has been echoing in the back of my head that won't shut up is the fact that you've come up with an activity that people can do that keeps their hands off their dumb phones. I mean, it's a rare thing, Samantha. There's not so many options out there that people really actually. I've done yoga with a phone. That's all I'm saying. So I mean, this is a pretty biggie.
I don't know how you do that. You're like,
hi Jacob.
Like downward facing dog, and you're typing on the floor on your phone.
Yeah, and plus, you know, you just get a shavasana a lot, and you're just laying down a lot, you know. So anyway, I think it's a big move. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Good to see Jacob. Jacob's our guest yesterday, and now it's a planter.
We love him. He is adorable.
By the way, you're hanging pot. I also thought you could also call it a standing cereal bowl, right? What's to make it not a standing cereal bowl? You can have your cereal in that.
Why would you stand and eat your cereal? I mean, whatever.
Why wouldn't you? You know, people stand at their desks now. Sitting is the new cancer. That's what they told me.
we still have regular cancer. Like, we don't need another one.
Cancer's the old cancer.
We got it.
Oh, a pottery app so I can keep my hands clean.
Yeah, we just like caress your phone lovingly.
Isn't this just 3D printing, Sam? Like, can't we just do this with some other thing?
There is 3D printing of pottery, but like I said, it takes that experience out of it. It's pretty cool,
joy
though.
Out of Mudville. I'm with you. I'm with you. All right, we're grabbing our author, Jeffrey Stevens, back so we can have a little panel and say hi. Jeffrey, have you made a few plant pots in your day?
Never. But I do want to say this, that Sam mentioned this. I am also a terrible painter. And years ago, I was in Paris. And I came back and I was so inspired, as so many people are when they go to Paris. You know, you go to the Musée d'Orsay, you go to the Louvre, and you see these amazing paintings. And you say, I got to be able to do this. I bought an easel. I bought the paints. I bought canvas. And I did one landscape. One. And my wife looked at this and she said, a 4-year-old could do better. It was so bad. And I worked my heart out on this thing and it was great. And like you said, the tactile, you know, experience of painting. So anyway, I said, something good has got to come of this. And so I used everything I had seen in Paris in the first spy book that I did. And that so I realized, if you're a writer, you're a writer. If you're a painter, you're a painter. There are very few Winston Churchills out there. So anyway. Not a good painter.
Now one of your characters can do pottery or something.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
You keep the gun in there. It writes itself, Jeffrey.
Right. I do like the thing, Sam, when you said, you know, when there's a hole in the bottom, now you've got a drain. That's fantastic, because so many times, you know, we want to put those, you know, little plastic pots into something nice that's ceramic, but it's got to be able to drain. So that's perfect. You put a little saucer underneath, you're done.
Yeah. Exactly.
Could you do Ghost with 3D printed pottery where there's a will?
A lot of slack for Ghost, though, huh?
There's a way. I know Ghost is like the Nickelback of movies all of a sudden.
Really?
People just hate it. Yeah. What at least this morning.
I remember it well. Happened.
Fine feature film. It also had, you know, that other guy who's in every movie.
What, the villain? Character.
The villain guy, yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but he's good. But I have to say it was one of Whoopi's best performances, that and Sister Act, as you mentioned. Right. I mean, she was great in Ghost.
93rd highest grossing movie of all time. It was really gross.
Carlos Bruner is the name of that.
Evidently.
Is it? My gosh.
You go on IMDb real quick. How did you get that?
You know, I'm a fast typist.
Sam does have a website, Kat. She is at potterywithapurpose.com. And you can get those kits, and she'll send you kits so you can do pottery yourself at home. And, you know, maybe people will not have to see it if, like Jeffrey's wife, they think it's bad. You can just keep it at home. Not like in a class where people are seeing what you're doing, like in real time, because that would weird me out.
Yeah, the kits are available next Friday. So the 30th is when we're launching.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Is there any special codes, landing pages? What do you got?
Yeah, so there is a special code, but I can extend a special code to listeners. So if you type in when the site's live, backpack 20, you will get 20% off. And then if you go to the website, there's a chance to win a free kit now as well. You just go and enter your website. Yeah.
Guess what, Jeffrey? We're going to send you one of these. For a gift after the show.
Oh God, don't worry about it. I'll give it to somebody worthy of it. Trust me. It won't be me.
You can shape it into a microphone and people will think you have one.
I don't think so.
The best joke.
I don't think so. Arts and crafts, not my thing, unfortunately.
Well, fine, for an author guy. You lack vision. Okay. Yes,
I'm a word guy.
Fine then.
Oh my golly, this show. So, by the way, so I looked at the villain of the show and it said that name, Carlos Bruner. I'm like, that can't be the guy. Like, that doesn't even sound right at all. Rick Aviles is the guy we're all thinking of. But there's evidently another bad guy, you know, who was in Ghost and none of us remember it because that's how well that movie did. We all just remember that pottery scene.
Yeah. That's what we remember.
All right.
Not to spoil things, but the funny part is I was like, whatever, I guess he's kind of a dick. And that he murdered someone. I'm like, he's kind of a dick. But then when you put the moves on Demi Moore, I was like, that's the moment I was like, yes, he is a very bad man.
He's a bad man.
Isn't that interesting, right? Demi Moore. Yeah. The murder wasn't really so bad, spoiler. But then putting the moves on Demi, that was next.
Yeah, that was next level.
That's when it goes.
That was over the top.
Yes, I concur. Thank you.
All right, we've come to the point of the derailed backpack show. We do the person of the day.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
I don't know. How do you not pick your dad today?
You know,
he's on fire.
My dad is on fire. Mr. Mustard was killed in the dining room by a thrown pot. If you can't do pottery, you can still write about it.
There you go. Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
Kat points out she just signed up, Sam. She's looking forward to April. It's April now. You mean like in a couple
weeks? Yeah, she means when it launches. Yeah.
Oh, got it. Okay. I was paying
half
attention.
Don't be so persnickety.
Let's do it. So listen, we have Rick saw him at Chili's in Vermont.
It's like the least scary place I've ever heard of. Chili's in Vermont.
Did he order baby back ribs?
It was so bad. But she was still scared.
Here's a question we ask every one of our very patient guests, which is what goes in your backpack? I mean, it could be anything. It could be one of those little wooden tools you use to scry into the side of the clay. It could be liquid paper. But it could be something either physical or something metaphorical. Carrie, what's something you could throw in a backpack that's physical, would you say?
A book you hate, because eventually if it's the only book you have to read, you'll learn something from it.
It's a good one.
That was
who put that
Nate's
in the backpack?
Whiskey Nate?
All right. And what's
he's the guy who makes his living taking pictures of whiskey bottles against scenic vistas on Instagram.
He makes a whole living doing that. Feel bad about yourself. All right. What's something metaphorical you could add to the backpack?
Kindness.
Best one ever.
Ariel Helvetica, burlesque performer, added kindness to the backpack.
So, and by the way, Chip Griffin gets a special honorable mention for asking, where is Vermont?
Oh, dear.
So, So
stop
you have
touching
to understand,
buttons. Stop
I'm
it.
Touching Vermont for a second. Vermont, for people who live in New Hampshire or Maine, is one of those other places that we have a rivalry with for no real reason. No one else hates it besides we other New Englanders. So,
upside down New Hampshire.
Let's go backpack question again. Jeffrey Stevens, what would you put in the backpack?
You want metaphorical or literal or what do you
mean? Either something physical or metaphorical, whatever rolled into your head at that moment.
I know this is going to sound corny as hell, and I'm sorry, but yes. It would be my family.
Very nice.
Don't forget to poke air holes.
And depending upon how big the pack is, if I could stick a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle in there.
Oh, now we're working.
With a childproof cap. Yeah.
I like it. Sam Hoff, what goes in your backpack today?
Sure. So for physical, I would go with my dogs. If I could fit them. I love them. They're so much fun to spend time with, and they get me outside, which has been important during COVID. And then for something metaphorical, I guess it's not metaphorical, but I love sleeping. And people are always like, as a yoga instructor, like, what's your morning schedule? And I'm like, I sleep in until like 10, and then I wake up and I hang out with my tea, and sleep is so important. So yeah.
Sleep's where I'm a Viking. Okay. So those are two pretty darn good things to add to the backpack. There's a little commentary going on about now mocking Canada. And I have to tell you, my grandmother was French Canadian. She was born and raised in the New Brunswick area. She had some relatives in the Quebec province as well, near Montreal. Kat also loves you, and you're her new hero. So there you go, Sam. But one thing I can tell you about my grandmother is that if she were the kind of person to write a thriller, I've got to tell you, Chip would be the perfect victim of the people that she might fight. Let me tell you what she'd do first.